Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cast Dice, the podcast that explores the great big wild world of tabletop gaming that exists today. It's been said once or twice, mainly on this podcast, that we are in the middle of a gaming renaissance. There are just too many good games that we can spend our hobby time and our hobby dollars on, and it can lead to a serious case of not knowing what to play next. And I guess that's the purpose of this podcast. It's to talk to my guests about the games we enjoy playing, to talk about big industry events, and to talk to the people who create these games. Now, I know we have been on a little bit of a run recently of talking about new games, but there has been a game that I have seen some social media presence about that I did not want to miss. Now, if you've been listening to this show for a while, there is a game that gets mentioned regularly by people who are on the show as a game that they're playing on the side. We've even talked to the author in the past, and it is one of the Osprey Blue Books, and we love those books on this show. Of course, I'm talking Zona Alpha, and the author of that book has a new game coming out, When Nightmares Come. And yes, with a name like that, you know I have to get the author back on. Joining me today is one of my favorite Osprey Blue Book authors, Patrick Todorov. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Brad. I appreciate it.
Man, it has been a hot minute since you've been on the show. We've heard post-COVID a lot of people talking about how certain games disappeared into the void of COVID lockdowns, and you know, just like some games just got swallowed up and disappeared. And Zona Alpha came out sort of in that bubble where a lot of games just went poof and were gone. And yet, even though the Blue Book came out years ago, people are playing that game and there is a strong and rich community for it. You've got to be happy about that.
It's incredibly humbling and astonishing that people, anybody plays my game at all, right? Mm-hmm. And so to have, so to put it out prior to the lockdown, and then still have people playing it, and to get, have people send me battle reports from Australia, from France, from Great Britain, to see people create their own exclusion zones, in the American Southwest or in rural England. I don't know, I get a huge kick out of it. I mean, it's amazing. It's humbling. It's inspiring. I'm astonished. I'm kind of waiting for somebody to tap me on the shoulder and say, it's okay, you can go home now. You know?
Mm-hmm. Even though it's a Blue Book, and you know, there have been expansions to Osprey games in the past. For example, when Stargrave came out, I know they put out a solo expansion through the Osprey website in tandem with the game. I know that's not a Blue Book, but it's still an Osprey book. You have kept releases going for a number of your games, not necessarily through the Osprey website, but through Wargames Vault and through other online platforms. I always think DriveThruRPG, but that's just one head of the Hydra of a website that has all sorts of things. But through Wargame Vault, you have actually put out a very rich expansion for Zona Alpha, Contraband, that I have, which is a great expansion. Can you talk about how that came into being? Because that was not even a glimmer in your eye the last time you were on.
So March, April, May, the first, it became obvious that solo gaming was going to become a thing. So back in 2020, March, April, May. Lockdown is March. By April, May, it's obvious that this isn't going away. And I did a quick stopgap, Lone Wolves in the Zone. And that was like two or three pages. Bloodbeard, Sorin, you know, had some great ideas about running it solo. So I threw that together. But when it became increasingly obvious that this was going to last a while, mm-hmm. I started jotting down and start collecting all of my thoughts about a real solo effort running Contraband, either solo or co-op with your sort of pod of safe people that you were around, that you, you know, sheltered with during COVID. Mm-hmm. And that's how Contraband came to be. It was a more expanded, larger version of the solo rules.
And since then, you've also been putting out other games. I know that Blood and Bone just came out, which, of course, was an expansion to another one of your games. What have you been up to since the COVID bubble? Because you have been prolific.
Well, that's nice of you to say. So I try to balance my time between writing fiction and writing game stuff. Mm-hmm. The game stuff gets a more immediate response and has a larger following, I guess. And so I tend to concentrate on gaming. And plus, you know, I'm gaming all the time. I have a regular game group. Actually, I have two regular game groups, and grandkids and, you know, whatever. So I'm always busy doing stuff like that. So I have put out, so Hardwired got turned into Exploit Zero. Mm-hmm. It had to be renamed. Night Watch, Terror and Treasure. And then the second edition that just came out was Blood and Bone. And then there was Insurgent Earth. And then there's mission packs for those games as well.
Yeah.
Those I've been working on, as well as fiction. So I'm working on a post-apocalyptic fantasy novel and a dungeon delve. A story about Pete Cruz who are hired professionally to go delve into your dungeon and grab the treasure for you. So they have investors and backers, and they do this for wealthy people who don't want to get their hands dirty, but they need somebody to go raid that dungeon or that crypt.
I'm sensing a trend in your games and in your fiction, dystopian situations and ones where people have to go in to either investigate something or grab something, but there's always gribblies about. This seems to be a wheelhouse of yours.
Yep. Yes, that's true. I don't know what to say, and I don't know what that says about me, but yep, you got me.
Does this tie into games that you loved growing up? I know that you've been gaming for a long time, or is this just something that you've realized that you enjoy writing and you kind of leaned into it?
Good question. So I'm always looking to add story or narrative. And so the conflict, the end, the dramatic engine, the tension of not only having enemies there, but having a reason that you need to go into these places. So there's time constraints, there's debt, there's pressure on you to perform and to get things done. So that not only keeps the story moving in terms of fiction, but it keeps the game moving when I'm on the tabletop. So, and I love stories, so I try to combine my wargaming with story anytime I can.
And that ties in beautifully for your newest game that is coming out in just a few short weeks, When Nightmares Come. This is a solo cooperative skirmish game. So I'm sensing a trend there again. For investigating and battling supernatural mysteries in the modern world. This is a game, modern day monster hunting and occult investigations. This feels amazing. So we're getting a little taste of Stranger Things, some Scooby-Doo, X-Files, plus maybe a little Grimmer on the side. Am I getting the wheelhouse for this game about right?
You are. I grew up watching Kolchak, the Night Stalker.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Kolchak episode? Because mine has to be the werewolf on the cruise ship.
Oh, that's a huge question. Okay, right. I can't answer that question right now. Yeah. I can't. Yeah, so the poor guy that nobody believes him, and he's encountering, you know, he's experienced all this stuff, and he's trying to get proof. So, and then you get Stranger Things, you get Supernatural, and you get The Strain. I remember, I loved The Strain, or at least the first couple seasons.
Yep.
So I got asked, when I put out Night Watch, Terror and Treasure, immediately people say, you know, can you do a modern one? Mm-hmm. And I'd sort of filed that thought away. And then I was contacted by Osprey and they say, hey, you got anything new you're working on? And I said, well, what about a modern Night Watch? And they said, sure, write up a proposal. I did. They liked it. And now you've got When Nightmares Come. At the same time, I was toying with the idea of sinking a rules light. I don't want to use RPG because it's not an exhaustive system, but storytelling opportunities. So I wanted to sink that element and the dice mechanics that I use, the action dice pool that I use sort of in the tactical side, I wanted to see if I could bring them over into a narrative scene or a narrative element to the game. And I had already started jotting down notes and outlining Blood and Bone to see if I could integrate, have a bigger, have a second edition of Nightwatch. And so a lot of those ideas got ported into Nightmares.
Do the two games share a lot of the same mechanics?
They do. They're all built on that same engine that kind of dropped into my head for Hardwired, now called Exploit Zero. I have a pretty large regular gaming group, and we rotate games. A couple of the guys are really into D&D 5th edition, and there'll be weeks where they run the games, you know, 1 month, 2 months. We'll be playing 5th edition. We also are big fans of Simbarum, Free League Simbarum. I love that game. So we had been playing Savage Worlds Interface Zero. And then it came my turn, and I wanted to get away from the RPG, but on back onto the tabletop. But so I really liked the idea of everybody cooperating. And I was in a cyberpunk mode. And the mechanics for Hardwired, Exploit Zero, kind of just dropped into my head. And so I jotted them down, and this is just prior to Zona Alpha coming out. I jotted them down, and they became sort of the core mechanic, the core engine for my games. And I seem to have fallen into that solo co-op tabletop miniature war game space. I like it. I like narrative campaigns, narrative games, and I like the solo co-op the cooperative element.
I know that in the press for this game, they talk about action dice pools with multiple dice types. So if I'm understanding this right, with this game, when your character activates, your character moves, and then there's a variety of actions they can undertake, but you have to prioritize which one of those actions a certain dice is allocated to, because they'll have like a D6, a D8, a D10. And by prioritizing, you have to manage which of those dice that you have a better chance or a worse chance of succeeding. You have to sort of place that dice with that action, and you need to prioritize what you think is the most important thing your character needs to do on the tabletop. So there's a lot of tactical choice, or as I like to say, opportunities for bad decisions.
That's right. That's it. So you get a free move and then an action dice pool that is composed of the D6, D8, D10, like you said. You can take the free move at any moment, at any time. You can use the D6, D8, D10 in any order you want. But yes, you're correct. You have to prioritize what do you want to do on the table when you're activated? How important is it to you? And which dice type gives me the best chance at succeeding that particular action?
What are some of the actions that you can choose between? Because when you have a number of these, it tells me that there's a lot of things that you can be doing on the tabletop.
So you can continue to move. You've got a free move, but then if you want to move any further, you have to roll dice for it. You can interact with terrain. You can interact with fellow players when it's your activation. You can apply a healing potion or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. You can cast a magic scroll, you can take a potion, you can shoot, you can fight, you can go on Overwatch, you can do a called strike where you put a bit more effort into the either the shot or the hit that you're about to try and land. Yeah, moving, interacting, fighting is what it comes down to. Yep.
You have mentioned your love of a narrative, almost an RPG-like feel for your games. And one of the aspects of this game that has been touted by Osprey in the advertising, for example, is the flexible player classes. So that each character has an individual class. Does that have an impact on how these dice rolls work and how successful characters are with particular actions?
Well, depending on your class, you are allowed to roll two of a given action die type and choose the better result. So if you're a melee fighter, if you're a warden who leans into melee, anytime you try and hit somebody with your sledgehammer, your fire axe, or whatever, mm-hmm. you're going to choose two of that die type, whichever one you picked, and roll it twice or roll two of the same die type, choose the better result. That's something you're good at. Mm-hmm. The weaver, who is the spellcaster, whenever they try to cast spells, they're going to do that. The wright, who is the support specialist, whenever they're handling what's called a concoction or a contraption, whenever they, you know, toss a monster lure or try to give you, you know, give you a healing potion, they're going to roll two die and choose the better result.
And when we are talking about just model count for this game, because folks always like to know, your investigator team for this game is 4 to 6 models-ish?
Yeah, I just for the sake of a round number, I said the max you need for a full 6 mission case, to have a full nightmare, you need 36 models total. That's 6 games. So you'll need 10 of each tier. There's 3 tiers of adversaries. Mm-hmm. You'll need 10 of each. You'll need a big bad guy at the end. That's your atrocity. And then you'll need 4 or 5 hunters, player characters. Yeah. And that puts you at 36 models. Now, of course, you can get more. I'm always happy to give people an excuse to go buy more minis. But you can get away with 36. You can use what you have. You can, yeah, pull out all those minis from the Zombicide game or Deep Madness or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. and put them on, get them on the table.
Now, when you're talking tiered enemies, what are we talking about here? Are we talking all the way down to like giant rats, to rat swarms, to werewolves on up? I know the atrocities tend to be, you know, the big bads, sort of the boss level monster. But what do we see building up to that in, as part of the investigations?
I got you. So depending on which theme you choose for your adversaries, your dark spawn, you're going to use rats, bats, zombies, whatever it might be. But the generic classes of adversary are vermin, horde, and terror. And they each use one of those particular die types. And they have an appropriate or equivalent number of actions. So your vermin, they'll get a free move and one action with a D6. And they can be your rats. They can be your bats. They can be scorpions, right? They can be zombies if that's your thing. If they're your lowest tier of adversary. Your horde are going to get a free move and then 2 actions, but with a D8. Your terrors get a free move and then 3 actions with a D10.
So they tier up as you go.
They tier up as you go. And yes, if you don't play well, you will tier up too.
Yeah. I like that. Yep.
Sorry, it was a bit obvious. I walked right into that. Sorry.
Hey, I'm a primary school teacher. Dad jokes are welcome on this show.
There we go.
Given the way that you're describing how the dice type works for this game and how the actions work as far as attacking and whatnot, and having played Zona Alpha, it feels like combat for this game is intentionally short, sharp, and punchy. You want quick combat res because you want a good, quick game. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, correct. I'm really all about keeping the narrative going, keeping the action going as much as I possibly can. Well, I want people to enjoy themselves. I want there to be that sort of flow, that sense of immersion, where there's no downtime, there's no lag. We minimize that. I try to minimize that. Yeah. Minimize lag time, where you're kind of sitting around waiting for this guy to finish his actions or to finish his turn, and people are like looking on their phone, or they're like, oh, you know what? And I'm like, let's keep everybody involved. Let's keep the story going. Keep the action going. So I try to minimize dice rolls and wounding and all that. The whole procedure, I try to keep that as simple and streamlined as possible.
This game can be just played as a pickup, but I know that your sort of goal for players is to play through, as you say, sort of a narrative story arc. I know you've said 6 missions as being one nightmare. How do you, can you give us an example of what that might look like or sound like for players, and how long would you envision something like that take to play out?
So a single game with narrative and tactical component, so one incident, is going to take less than 90 minutes. a full nightmare can be played probably over the course of, and I mean, again, I don't know how long people's gaming sessions are. If you've got all Saturday, you might be able to get two or three incidents in, mm-hmm. which is half of a nightmare. But you can also run it over the, you know, if you meet weekly, you could get it done in 6 weeks kind of thing. Yeah. Being an open world, open miniature system, Nightmares doesn't have any, it's not linked to any particular setting. I'm not advocating any particular line of miniatures. And I don't want to write scripted campaigns. Let me put it this way. I do want to write scripted campaigns. Let me amend this statement.
Yeah.
I'm happy to write scripted campaigns, but I don't want to force people to, I don't want to tell people what to play. Yeah. And one of the things that I've noticed is that there's people are so creative and so inspired, and they've got their own ideas. They want to do Scooby-Doo. They want to do Supernatural. They want to do Delta Green. And I don't want to say, no, I didn't write anything for Delta Green. You can't play it. Yeah. Like, of course you can. Yeah. I mean, that you bought the game. It's your game now. So do something with it. My goal is to offer a toolbox or a system, not necessarily a script or a straitjacket that you have to stay within. Okay. So when you create your nightmare, there's a series of tables that you roll on. What has happened? Where has it happened? Who is there? When did you arrive on the scene? You can either pick from those tables because you've got an idea of the story that you want to play in, or you can roll and see what happens. So the supplement that I have coming out, Smuggler's Neck, so that has a definite theme to it. And the scenarios are already sort of written out, but they're examples. I'm not going to start cranking those things out, you know, every couple of weeks, because that's not the purpose. The purpose is to inspire people to play their own games and tell their own stories.
Yeah. Smuggler's Neck looks really good. As you say, it's a sample of what people could play. But it's, you have people disappearing along a waterfront. No one's listening, no one's paying attention, and yet people are disappearing, the downtrodden and the discarded. So how are you going to help these people? And it's an example campaign that people can pick up and play. Of course, that is available or will be available through Wargame Vault. Will be like a couple dollars added to what you already have, but it's a series of missions that people can play through. And if you are looking for something a little more structured, as opposed to the system that comes in the base game, or you're just looking for some more content, here it is.
Correct. And again, I'm happy to put out more content for the game. But again, my goal is always to inspire people and help people play their own run their own stories.
Exactly. Now, I know in the When Nightmares Come Blue Book, there mm-hmm. is an example of the city of Beacon Falls, which is anywhere USA, so to speak. And in yep. there, you have as possible locations, places like a school, a museum, an observatory, city hall, et cetera, et cetera. But as you say, anywhere could be your location. You just give people the bare bones of this is what it could be. But if you really want to dig into your own particular narrative, here's how you can do it.
Right. So Nightmares has two modes. It has a narrative scene and a tactical engagement. Now, it's a tabletop war game, so a majority of the gameplay is going to be the miniature war game, the tactical engagement, getting minis on the table. But I wanted to create an opportunity for people to tell stories and to generate a sense of immersion. So the narrative scenes, they're almost like the cut scene in a computer game before you actually go into the action. You have the little conversation with the people and then you jump out of the dropship or you go through the door, you know, whatever it might be, and then you start your battle. So that's the idea behind the narrative portion of the game. But of course, people can set them anywhere. But I wanted to create So I wanted to give an opportunity for storytelling and creative solutions, non-combat challenges and creative solutions among the players. But I wanted it to have some sort of impact on how you deploy in the imminent battle.
Yeah.
So if you roll well, you enter into the battlefield with an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of roll sort of neutral, mixed results, kind of, yeah, we did 50-50. We didn't do terrible. We didn't do great. You're entering the battlefield sort of at the default setting. But if you're like, yeah, this guy got lost. This guy got buttonholed by the cops. This guy ran into a homeless person who tried to pickpocket him, and you all ended up coming into battle, you know, coming onto the battlefield late and separated. You're like, oh, holy crap, what are we going to do here? That's a werewolf, you know, and where's John? He was right behind me a second ago. Mm-hmm. Like, well, he's showing up at the end of turn two, right, on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
Right, because he got lost.
That's right.
Or something, right? Or he tried to pick the lock on the door and it took him a while.
Yeah.
And he ended up having to bust the window.
Just to give people a sense of scale of the battlefield that you're describing,
yep.
It's a 2x2 tabletop. How dense a tabletop, as far as terrain-wise, do you envision people having for this?
Yeah, medium density at least.
Okay.
Because the more open lanes you have and range of fire you have, the more the enemies are going to come at you and charge. Yeah. Enemies are much more dangerous in nightmares. We mentioned the tiers, the Vermin Horde, the Terror. Well, each tier gets to pick an associated number of monster traits so you can flavor your bad. So they're not all D6s are alike. That's one of the things that I've heard about a couple other of my games is that all the adversaries are very homogenized.
Mm-hmm.
They're generic, but now there's sort of a menu. So you can pick from the menu, these traits and you flavor them. So D6 get one trait, D8s get two, and the D10 terrors get three. Mm-hmm. So they're absolutely brutal when you're fighting them. So it's a smaller model count, but they're much more dangerous. Especially at the higher levels.
Yeah, I was going to say at the higher levels that can stack up, can it?
Yeah, it really can. And it gets very nasty. And then you realize, oh, we really have to, you know, tag team this guy because we're not going to take him down. He's rolling a D10. He needs a four or better to block me. And he can fly, right? He hits me with multiple attacks and he's up armored. So we're really going to need to team up on this guy to take him down.
Mm-hmm.
So that those sorts of things, you know, enter into it. No, you can flavor them to taste because if you're like, well, my vermin are rats. So there's a trait called swarm. Makes sense to give it to them. But if you've got, if your vermin are zombies, you can give them a trait called tenacious, which is unless you hit them with a crit or with an aimed shot, they're going to get back up.
Right.
And so on and so forth. So you can flavor your enemies by theme.
And this really leans into that cooperative element that you were talking about before. If you want to be playing this with other people, all of a sudden, you know, I'm just having thoughts of my last game of Mansions of Madness where we were, you know, one person's getting beat up and says, hey, I need help. And then everyone comes to run and help them. But by the same token, you're still trying to accomplish the mission and help those, you know, people who need it. There is that true teamwork. How are we going to get this done? And sometimes you have to leave someone to deal with those particular gribblies by themselves.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And if you, so in the game, if your character dies, you can obviously just roll up a new hunter, but you can also give them what's called a dark secret and an odd touch.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they got bitten by a werewolf. So they're going to have to get that fixed. They have some debilitating issues, but they also have some sort of a special supernatural ability that they can use once per game to help the team. So yeah, if your guy has a near-death experience, yeah, he comes back a little bit traumatized and a little bit weird.
I love it. I love it. And that the narrative element of that is fantastic and ties into so many movies and TV shows where that unexpected shows up because they've tangled with something in the dark and now they're dark themselves. I have to say that the cover art on this book is amazing. If the art on the cover is anything to go by, just going off of the beautiful art that was in Zona Alpha, I know Osprey always does a wonderful job of making sure that art in their games looks fantastic. You've been partnered this time with an artist named Boris Groh. How happy are you with the art in this book? Is it anything like Zona Alpha?
Oh no, it's deliciously twisted. It's got this really cool kind of scary cartoony feel to it that I really, you know, whatever, I really liked. I mean, when they sent me, they're like, hey, these are a couple of options. I was like, no, you've got to use this guy. This Groh guy, use him. These are crazy. These are crazy great. And they really are. He did a fantastic job. Like, I wish there were more.
That's one of the problems with the Blue Book. As amazing as the Blue Book range is, it's intentionally designed by Osprey to be a short, sharp game in a limited page count book that people can pick up for a low price point and enjoy on the tabletop. I love the idea of the series, but so many good games have come out of that. Zona Alpha, Gaslands, to name a few. And with games like that, I always want more. They really do an excellent job. But if there was more art, there'd be less game, right?
Yeah. And Osprey's been very gracious in allowing me to put out extra content and things like that, whether it's Contraband or Hunter Hunted for Zona Alpha, mm-hmm. Or Smuggler's Neck, you know, for Nightmares, and whatever else I end up writing for Nightmares. But they're very gracious. It's very nice to work with them. It's very easy to work with them. And they understand that there are constraints to the, you know, the page count, the word count, and not everything fit in the book. Mm-hmm. So they're like, yeah, put out more content and help us sell more books. And I'm like, okay, sure. That's fine. Yeah, done.
Well, that for those who aren't familiar, and I know that I've spoken to a couple people recently at a gaming club outside of Melbourne who mentioned Zona Alpha and said, yeah, I wish there was more for this. And I said, there is. Have you not known? And I showed them on Wargame Vault. But people don't always know where to look. So can you explain if people are looking for more content for your games, particularly on Facebook? You have an excellent Facebook community. Where can people find it?
These days I do print versions through Amazon, mm-hmm. because they're faster and they tend to be less expensive. And then I do the PDFs through Wargame Vault. Mm-hmm. And that's really it. I mean, it's just me here. So it's not like I have my finger on the self-publishing pulse.
Right.
And I can cover all the venues and all the social media platforms and everything like that. I have to focus my attention. So the extra content is available in those two places. There's some overlap, but some of the campaign mission packs, the campaign supplements, they're only available in PDF at Wargame Vault. Smuggler's Neck will only be available. It's only going to be about 25 pages or something. And that'll be a PDF at Wargame Vault exclusively.
But if you want to find out more information, I know, for example, I found out about Smuggler's Neck through the Zona Alpha, spelled Zona Alpha Facebook. I don't want to say group entity.
Yeah. There's a page Zona Alpha. Yeah. I have a page Zona Alpha, but then there's a group, yeah. Stalker 7. Yeah. So Stalker 7 is the Facebook group for my games.
Yeah, that is a wonderful group, and the creativity of people's both terrain and models for Zona Alpha and your other games is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. It's really inspiring. It just reinforces my thought is that I don't have to tell people what to play. They've already got loads of ideas, and you know, and they come up with better ideas and better, like, wow, that table's nicer than mine. Like, you know what I mean? We're all coming to your house to game. you know.
Exactly. And it's worldwide too. So, you know, it's funny. A couple people I've seen in that group, I've then actually met in real life here in Australia and just gone, it's funny because if you think about where you are, the author of the game and, you know, the East Coast of the United States, and then compare that to, you know, where I am on the exact opposite side of the planet. And I'm running into people whose terrain I've seen online. And then all of a sudden I see it in real life. It really does speak to the global nature and fan base of your game systems.
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, I would love to get together with these people. I really would. I mean, I don't know if there'll ever be a ZonaCon or anything like that, but I would love it. I'd love just to hang out with these guys and, yeah, play games.
Man, I'd be tempted to make that flight.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Well, Patrick, I know you mentioned your fiction earlier, and I don't want to let you go without talking about that. Can you mention a little bit more where people can find your fictional work? Because we've talked quite a lot about your gaming work. If folks are interested and want to see more of you, how can they find you and what kind of stuff could they be looking for?
So I self-published through Amazon. Mm-hmm. I have a series. So I write science fiction, cyberpunk, fantasy. I've got some Zona Alpha or Zone Exclusion Zone stories mm-hmm. out there. There's a trilogy. There's three of them. A Prayer to St. Strelok, Strange Treasure, and Gopnik Blues. Those are available on Kindle and as audiobooks. Oh, cool. I've also got standalone shorts. There's a Celtic ghost story. There's a story about a Russian invasion of Poland. There's the near future sci-fi stuff. There's a cyberpunk murder mystery called Soul Cash. All kinds of whatever. All the weird stuff bouncing around in my head, you know, finds a way onto the page eventually. Yeah, and so that's there at Amazon.
Well, Patrick, I have to say thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. As we've discussed, you're an incredibly prolific and busy man. And just to take the time has just been wonderful. I'm really looking forward to getting my grubby paws on When Nightmares Come. And I can't wait to play. I was actually painting up some giant rats to make sure that I had some things ready to go. And I literally have a bat swarm on my tabletop right now. Nice. Sorry, on my painting table. So ready to go, sir. Thank you very much for making the time. It's always a pleasure, sir.
Outstanding. Thank you very much. I genuinely appreciate it.
No worries. Well, friends, thank you also for listening. Yes, you right there listening to this podcast right now. If you have requests for future episodes of Cast Dice, please go to the Cast Dice Facebook page and message. You'll guaranteed a response by me. Hi, my name is Brad. We love hearing all of your thoughts and all of your requests for content. I guess that takes us to what our buddy Casey always says. When you are playing the games that we know and love, I hope that your dice roll hot. I hope your beverages are cold. But more than that, we at Cast Dice hope that you are having fun. Stay safe out there, guys. Good night. Another day rise in Paraguayan sun. The few cracks open, another Heineken. He's all alone, he's in his little room. He's all alone with a Burmese python and a loaded gun. He sleeps
his friends are gone, and they're tracked by home.